You are listening to a sermon from Christ Church, a multi-site church in southwest Louisiana. Christ Church is a distinctly biblical, ever-multiplying, economically and ethnically diverse covenantal community calling Acadiana to follow all of Christ in all of life. To hear more from Christ Church, you can subscribe to our podcast in iTunes or visit us on the web at wearechristchurch.com.
I think most of us who are old enough to have had a job, that we at some point hated. I've had a few, actually. Not my current one, mind you. Not this one. I do quite enjoy this one. I was a car salesman for 1 month. That was miserable. It was my first full-time job out of college. Leah was pregnant with Lincoln, and my boss was a miserable person to work for, and so I did not last long. I hated that job. I didn't love my first job as a waiter either. I may have told y'all some of this story. I was baptized by fire into the restaurant industry. I don't know if how many of you are familiar with Houston's restaurant in New Orleans or Metairie. It's an uppity restaurant that doesn't do advertising because it's so good and their service is so good. And so there was a lot of pressure on us waiters to make sure it was so good. That entailed me having an entire menu memorized, including like every little item on every different salad, of which there were probably 8 different salads. And so I had to know which, you know, items were on this salad or not on this salad. And then I had to know the rest of the menu, and I had to know every wine pairing that would go well. I don't even like wine. It was an interesting adventure knowing those things. I also had to have my uniforms dry cleaned, and my shifts were basically from 4:30 to 12:30, walking as fast as I possibly could, right? And it was just miserable. I hated I liked some parts of it, but I hated Sunday nights. Like, there was at one point where I called in on a Sunday night, and I talked to the manager, and he was like, "Matt, you call in every Sunday at 4 o'clock. Stop it or get a new job." And I was like, "Oh, you're right. I do." And I was like, "I'm not really sick. I'm just anxious. Like, I don't want to be there that night." But a couple years after I left there, a buddy of mine that helped me get the job went back, and he saw everyone that he left. All right, saw everyone that was still there. You know, we'd left because of Katrina. I had actually put my 2 weeks notice in because we were going to be moving up to Louisville anyway. And I remember the restaurant manager looked at me. He said, "Well, I didn't think you'd make it this long." Oh, thanks. It was like a backhanded compliment. Like he was complimenting me. Like, yeah, you stuck to it and you got better. But also was like, wait a minute. Like, I didn't know how to take that. But anyway, so a buddy of mine went back after a few years, and he saw some of those people that were still there. It was one of those career type waiter jobs, if that's what you wanted to do. And I remember he told me, I saw him a little bit after he went. He said, "Matt," he said, "me and you are the only two people that they're not allowed to talk bad about." And I was like, "What? What does that even mean?" He was like, "Because of all the waiters that we had, me and you were the only ones that, in their eyes, lived out the faith that we preached." And I was like, "What?" I went home so often, I felt like I didn't even share the gospel at all. Like, there were so many nights that I went home and kicked myself for opportunities that I missed in sharing the gospel or speaking up for Christ. I learned a lot from that experience. And what I learned is, one of the things I learned is that it's not so much the work we do that matters. It's how we do it and why we do it. You see, what made the biggest impression on my coworkers was not my proficiency as a waiter. We had ranking systems that determined who got the best sections. And guess whose name was either at the bottom or near the bottom every time? Mine. right? I was not a good waiter. And so my proficiency, my skills as a waiter is not why they looked back on us 2 years later and were like, we can't talk bad about that guy. Because they would have had plenty to talk bad about for me if it was my skills as a waiter. No, what made the biggest impression was how I conducted myself and the attitude I had, even though on the inside I was dreading it most of the time. You see, the deep conviction that we have here at Christ Church is that Christ makes a difference in every area of life. We say it right there, to follow all of Christ in all of life. In other words, the gospel transforms everything, including how we approach our work. Right? We see that here in Ephesians 6, 5 through 9. So let's read it, and then we'll talk about it. Ephesians 6, 5 through 9 says, "Bondservants, obey your earthly masters with fear and trembling, with a sincere heart as you would Christ, not by the way of eye service as people pleasers, but as bondservants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, rendering service with a good will as to the Lord and not to man, knowing that whatever good anyone does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether he is a bondservant or is free. Masters, do the same to them and stop your threatening, knowing that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven, and that there is no partiality with him." All right, we don't have time to get into everything in that passage this morning. And so we have to pick and choose a little bit, but I do think we'd be remiss if we don't address the elephant in the text, right? If you're reading a version or translation of the Bible other than the ESV or the New King James Version, I believe, verse 5 will start with Paul addressing slaves. If you have the ESV, like I do, like I'm reading, or if you have the New King James Version, it'll say bondservants. Now, Paul here, again, is doing something radical. Remember, these are the household codes, as most scholars have called them. And just as it was with women and children, which we've talked about the last 3 weeks, the fact that he is even addressing the bondservants is radical. He is, in essence, treating them, these who were then slaves. Slaves is an apt translation of that word. He is treating them as people. He's giving them respect and recognition in a time when they wouldn't have had that. Now, slavery then is not the slavery of American history that we are used to. Slavery wasn't based on race then, and it wasn't a lifelong deal. In fact, the reason they translate that word bond servants is usually because the slaves were indebted somehow to their masters, and so they couldn't pay it off, and so they had to work for them. They were basically working off their debt. And slavery was also, there was usually something that by the time they were 30, most slaves were freed. But there were some similarities in that these bondservants, they were considered property. They didn't have rights on their own. They were sometimes treated harshly, right? That kind of was dependent on the master. Some masters were really good. Some of them were really not good. And which one you got was just kind of tough luck or good for you. In fact, they are encouraged. At some points they're saying you could even choose to remain in bondage if you had a good life there. Right, and so that gives us some idea of that it wasn't quite what we're used to in the when we think about slavery in America, and so so that's kind of some of the context there. Now, some will accuse the Bible here because of this passage and others for not speaking against slavery, not speaking against it in a direct and strong way. As with most critiques of the Bible, that's kind of an exaggeration. The overwhelming testimony of the Bible is that slavery is evil. We see that in several places that we don't have time to get into. But you also have to remember at this point that there were more slaves in the Roman Empire than there were Christians. And so we're not talking about a political machine here Christianity was not. They didn't have that kind of political clout yet. They didn't have that. In fact, there may have been more slaves in Ephesus than there were Christians in the entire world at this point. Right. It's estimated that 1/3 of the Roman Empire at this time was in some sort of servitude. And so Christians, they were too small in number. They didn't have that kind of political clout. And so Paul's focus here is not on the evils of slavery or ending it, although he certainly would have agreed with that. In fact, he counsels slaves in either 1st or 2nd Corinthians to not go back into bondage. He says, when you're set free, then be free. Don't go back into bondage. And so Paul is not thinking that slavery is a good thing or that it shouldn't be outlawed, but he's more practical than that. So we don't have the clout to be able to overcome this. And so instead, let's focus on how to be Christians in it. He's more concerned with how the gospel transforms us in our relationships. Tony Marita says it like this. He says he's writing to give instruction about household relationships and responsibilities within a given society. His goal is not to write a document about changing the social structure. Now, where Paul probably would have wanted to change the social structure, he knew that's not a realistic goal. So let's see how the gospel can transform our relationships within it. And then hopefully the end goal is to change it over time. All right. All that being said, we don't have this exact social setting today. We don't have literal bond servants in our society, though some of us may have some debt. We don't actually work for MasterCard for no pay in order to pay that off. At least I don't think so. If that's your situation, you need to come talk to me after church. We can work you out of there. But we don't have legalized slavery. We don't have those kinds of things today. And so the closest application that we have to this, to our situation today, is our work. We do have bosses. Some of us are employees and some of us are employers. We have customers, we have guests, we have co-workers and clients. And when Christ comes into our lives, he radically changes our approach to our work and our relationships at work. And so if you wanted an outline for today, it would be that the gospel transforms our attitude at work and our objective at work. All right, so let's talk about our attitude at work first. In this text, we see three distinct attitudes that we're to have at work. The first one is solemnity, and then sincerity, and then faithfulness. We see solemnity first. Let's look at verse 5. It says, bondservants, obey your earthly masters, or employees, obey your employers with fear and trembling. With fear and trembling. Paul is referring here to obedience as a solemn and sacred duty. Now, he's not saying here that work shouldn't be fun. Right? We can definitely have fun at work, but contrary to popular opinion, having fun isn't the chief end of life. Right? The chief end of life is to glorify God. And one of the ways that we do that is by taking obedience to our bosses or our teachers or our parents or whoever is in authority over us seriously. That's what fear and trembling means, right? It's not the terror and shaking with fear that would have been more common in American slavery. It's more of a solemn and sacred duty. We know that because that's how Paul uses this phrase with fear and trembling in other places. It's a pretty common idiom. In 1 Corinthians 2, Paul was with the church with fear and trembling. He's not saying that he was scared of them. He's talking about the sense that he had that this mission was a solemn and sacred duty. He was put on mission by the Lord Jesus Christ and he took his mission seriously. Now he's applying that to our work. In 2 Corinthians 7, Paul commends the church for receiving Titus with fear and trembling. That doesn't mean that when Titus came, they started shaking in fear and terror of what he was going to do to them. They weren't scared of Titus. No, it means they respected him and they obeyed him and his teaching, knowing that he was commissioned by Paul. He was a messenger to them from God himself. In Philippians 2, This may be where you went with fear and trembling. It's when I first read it, I was like, hey, that's Philippians 2 with fear and trembling. In Philippians 2, Paul instructs us to work out our salvation with fear and trembling. Not because we're scared of Jesus. Right? We're not a whip dog. That's not how we approach the Lord. No, it's a seriousness. It's a serious thing, a solemn and sacred duty to be a Christian and to have the power of God working in us to will and to work for His good pleasure. It's taking up the task of holiness and Christian mission with dignity and sober-mindedness, right? It's the opposite of careless and flippant and flaky. It's the opposite of having that attitude towards your boss. It's taking your work seriously. Your job then, as Paul is teaching us, is a mission from the Lord. It is your sacred duty. Your obedience to your earthly superiors is a sacred task, a ministry, a mission from Christ. Not because you feel like it all the time, right? I mean, we've all been there. There were plenty of times walking into Houston's where I wasn't thinking, this is a sacred duty. And I certainly never felt that walking into a car lot. Listen, Christ didn't always feel it, I don't think. Just think about the garden. There was a lot there that Christ did not want to do. And so sometimes we have to approach our work as Christ did. We join Him in the garden praying, not my will, but yours. Do you see the difference? You see how different that is than how most people approach work? Like, this mindset towards work is foreign to a lost world. There's no unbelievers going into work thinking, this is my solemn and sacred duty and I'm on mission for the Lord here. No, nobody's thinking that. No unbeliever is thinking that. Nobody approaches their work like that if they don't know Jesus. Right? It's just a paycheck, right? It's not a mission. But listen, when you approach work like this, people take notice. It is so different than what most people do and the way most people approach their work. And the way most people approach their bosses and how they follow directives and receive orders from them. That's how you let your light shine at work. Why are you so different? How are you different? Because you do this and you approach your work this way. Right? The same is true for these others. The next attitude we see, and one that's just as gospel light shining, is the next few words in verse 5. Look at it. With fear and trembling, right? So with solemnity. And then with a sincere heart, or wholeheartedness. And so our attitude at work should be one of wholehearted engagement, When we are there, we are all in. We're not half-hearted. We're not distracted without, this means like without flakiness, but passionately and wholly. When you get to work or when you get to school or whatever task it is that you're engaged in, you take up that task as if the Lord Himself had assigned that to you, because ultimately He has. Right? That's what the rest of verse 5 is getting at. With a sincere heart, as you would Christ. That's what the sister verse in Colossians 3, 23 and 24 is getting at. Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men. You are serving the Lord Christ. Notice, I don't really buy into the whole secular sacred divide. Not for the Christian. The gospel transforms all of life down to the way you work. And so if you take up a task, you do it with excellence and wholeheartedness. If you commit to something, you follow through. But there's no room in the Christian life for flakiness and for dropping the ball. Now, I know stuff happens. Greater priorities intervene sometimes. That's unavoidable. I'm not talking about the unavoidable. But let's not be a people whose only consistency is that we are consistently flaky. Or that we are always just are dropping the ball and that we lack commitment. that reflects poorly on Christ. Instead, let the gospel compel you to obedience. And not just obedience, but joyful obedience. Wholehearted, joyful obedience. That is a distinctly biblical attitude at work. And you do that, people are going to wonder what in the world has gotten into you. You get to share Christ. Look at verse 6. Look at verse 6. He continues, not by the way of eye service as people pleasers. In other words, we don't just have that obedience and sincerity and wholeheartedness when our bosses are watching. No, we have faithfulness and we have integrity. We're constant and persistent in our work, regardless of our feelings, regardless of our circumstances, regardless of how closely our superiors are watching us. We're to be individuals who can be counted on to perform our tasks, to get our jobs done, even when no one is watching. We should be people who don't need supervision or micromanagement. Now, that doesn't mean you're not going to be micromanaged. Right, we've all had bosses who were micromanagers, and we can't worry about what they do to you, but you just got to be a person that if he didn't, you wouldn't need it. You can be counted on. Your employer should be confident that you can do the job, that you will do the job, that your heart is in it, that they can walk away from your office or your workstation or whatever it is, your job site, and they can know that the job is still going to get done. You're not going to go hide somewhere. You want to be the one whom the bosses say when they get together, we know we don't have to worry about him. We know we don't have to worry about her. He'll get the job done. She'll get the job done. And I know that some of you are employers. The same is true for you here. Right? You have that consistent faithfulness to the job that your employees see your work and have something to strive after. They're not back there or wherever they are thinking that you're the one who needs supervision. Right? You ever had a boss like that who gave you supervision? And you're like, whatever, dude, you're the one who needs the supervision. Right? Don't be that kind of boss. Be the kind that is a great boss because they know you're in it. You're faithful. You're wholehearted. You're in it. And you'll get your hands dirty and you'll work alongside them when things get tough and when they need it. Let's be those kind of people. Let's have that kind of attitude at work. Because when we do, when we approach our work with these kind of attitudes, solemnity, sincerity, faithfulness, when those things are true of you, people take notice. These attitudes exude off of you because they're so different from everybody else. That's how you let your light shine, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. These are the good works that you're called to. All right, and what may be your greatest mission field? Your workplace. Like, think about it throughout the week. That's one of the things I miss the most about being in a workplace. That I'm not surrounded by lost people anymore. Like, it's harder for me to go find lost people because I'm not surrounded by them at work. So work oftentimes is your greatest, your easiest mission field. You're surrounded by people. When you're in that environment and you serve wholeheartedly and you obey and respect your bosses and you have faithfulness and integrity, and that's a witness for Christ. And so you do need to evaluate whether or not this is true of you. So you need to check your body language and your responses when your bosses give you directives, when they tell you what to do. Ask yourself if you're doing just what is necessary or are you challenging yourself at work? Ask yourself if you have a joyful and upbeat attitude at work. Now, I know there's going to be days, but I'm saying in general, like if you had an off day, a bad day where you mouthed off or you didn't work as hard as you could, where people would say, well, something's going on. That's different. That's not the norm. We're going to have days like that. But if that is consistent for us, if we're consistently a complainer, we're consistently a slothful or disrespectful or we don't follow through, you're not only a bad worker, you're a bad witness for Christ. Right? I've been there, and so I say that, and I'm stepping on my own toes. Right? Like, I've been there, and there is grace for that. But listen, We are called to tell others about Christ, to engage in gospel conversations. Your reputation at work will determine how effective you are at witnessing to your most obvious targets, right? To your coworkers. If they don't respect you at work, why are they going to respect what you have to say about Jesus? Right? You can't tell others about the hope and joy that you have in Christ if you don't exude that hope and joy at work and in and through your work. So I say this with all seriousness. Christ Church folks should be the best bosses, the best employees, the best workers with the best attitudes. And if that, just let that be true of us at our work. Not because we're awesome, right? But because Christ is. And because we really believe it when we say that the gospel affects every part of our life, including our attitude at work. All right, but it's not just our attitude, is it? That the gospel changes. It's also our objective. Christians have a distinct objective at work. Most people have an objective at work that is, they see work as a means to an end. And what's that end? Money. Yeah, a paycheck. Yeah, most people, their objective at work is a paycheck. Or just getting to the weekend. And some teachers are just, I work here for the summer, right? I get the summer off. But typically, it's a paycheck. And listen, that's not altogether bad. That is one of the ways that God provides for us. He says, there's going to be work, and your work is going to pay you, and you're going to be remunerated for your work, and that's how I'm going to provide for you. So it's not altogether bad. That's one of the ways God provides for us, but that's not our primary goal at work. Neither is our goal to be the approval of men, right? Or to gain power or popularity. No, our main objective in our work is to please Christ. That is the Christian attitude towards work. That our work, the main objective in our work is to please Christ. This is verse 6 and 7. Not by the way of eye service as people pleasers, we're there, but as bondservants of Christ. We're not bondservants of our earthly masters. We have a greater master, Christ. Doing the will of God from the heart, rendering service with a good will, as to the Lord and not to man. In other words, Christians are to be consciously focused on Christ as the ultimate object of their obedience. Guys, this is how you can joyfully submit to an overbearing, unbearable boss. And if you're the boss, don't be that. But this is how you can submit to that kind of boss. Because you're not obeying him, you're obeying Christ. You're not submitting to him, you're submitting to Christ. It's how you can do a menial job. It's how you can be assigned a task that you think is below you, that you think someone else less qualified should be able to do. You can do that with joy because you know, I'm not doing this for my boss, I'm doing this for Christ. And when you have that mindset, listen, you can enjoy an inner communion with Christ all day long. Right, when you approach work this way, unbeknownst to everybody else, you've got this secret worship going on in your heart, this secret communion with Christ. And so that as you work, you are praying without ceasing. You're giving this work to the Lord. You're talking to him, God, I'm doing this for you. I am submitting. And sometimes it's Jesus, this is for you. I'm submitting joyfully to you. And that's it because I don't like doing this. But that may be what you're doing. Nobody else has to know about that. They may not know about that. But unbeknownst to them, you've got this worship going on in your heart, this walking with the Spirit while you're at work because you're giving your work to the Lord. And so how are you able to serve a harsh, screwed, hard-headed boss? You're not serving him, you're serving Christ. Like, how can you shine shoes so brightly? Right? Because you know that Jesus is going to put these shoes on. Right? Why do you sweep the path so clean? It's because Jesus is going to walk the path. Why do you take such good care of your students and your clients and your customers? Because they might as well be Jesus to you. And listen, where this new attitude and this new objective. When that exists, you can be fully persuaded that you will receive rewards of grace. Look at verse 8. Knowing, right? You are persuaded, you're sure, you're knowing that whatever good anyone does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether he is a bondservant or is free. What's the good that anyone does? It's what we just talked about. Obedience, sincerity, wholeheartedness, faithfulness. What does it mean that we'll receive it back from the Lord? It means that in the kingdom, no one is underpaid. Right? Not ultimately. In the kingdom, no work is done in vain. In the kingdom, every good deed is noticed by your master, and no good deed goes unrewarded. And these are the works. Like we said, this is the works that you've been called to. For we are his workmanship created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. These are the works. To do our work well and for Christ with a humble and joyful attitude. Guys, may we labor knowing that in our response to our work, we will hear from the Lord, well done, good and faithful servant. You may never hear that from your earthly boss. You may hear, I really didn't think you'd last this long. But let us strive to hear it from our Master in heaven. Now, there is no doubt in my mind that some of you are thinking, but Matt, you don't know my boss. And if I could go back to 21-year-old Matt working at the car dealership, I would have said, but 35-year-old Matt, you don't know my boss. You don't know how awful my job is. I feel trapped. I feel enslaved. I don't know how to do everything you just said. Two things. First, if you find yourself in a job situation that prevents you, I mean like totally prevents you, you are unable to do these things, you may just need to find a new job. You might just need to start looking somewhere else if it's that bad. But second, and I think this is more common, is that it may not be that bad. And so what you need to do is to do your best with much prayer and encouragement from the community of faith, right? From us. You got to tell us. We can't encourage you in that. We can't shepherd you through that. We can't encourage you in that if we don't know that that's what's going on, that that's what you're dealing with every day. That's what community is for, to help us walk you through that and walk with you through that. So you, with prayer and with encouragement from the body, you've got to try your best to apply everything that we've seen in Ephesians 6, 5 through 9 today. But let me add this one last bit. What's going to help you in this is having the mind of Christ. That's how Philippians says it. Have this mind among yourselves, the mind of Jesus Christ. And what is the mind of Christ? Let me read you an example from John 13. It was just before the Passover festival. Jesus knew that his hour had come, that he was about to endure the cross for our sin. And John 13, 2 through 5 says this. Listen, this is powerful. During supper, when the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garments and, taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. Listen, there was no more subservient task than washing the dirty, dusty, grimy, sweaty feet of first century men who'd been walking around on dusty roads with sandals on. And Jesus washes their feet. He who was superior of all becomes the servant of all. And for who? The deserving? No, Peter knows he's not deserving, right? If I would keep reading, you would hear Peter say, no, you're not doing this. I'm not worthy of this. And the only thing that convinces Peter to let him is that Jesus is like, if you don't let me, you don't have a place with me. And so then Peter says, what? You know, well, not my feet, but my head too. Like everything. Come on, everything. But Peter knows he's not deserving of this. That's why he protests. Was Judas worthy? Goodness gracious, no. And we don't often think that Judas hadn't left the table yet. When Jesus washes his Judas's feet. Why? Because he's loving. He loved them. He loves you. Have that mind of Christ. Let your heart be transformed by the gospel. Love your enemies like Christ did. Serve those who don't deserve to be served. Obey those who don't necessarily need to be or deserve to be obeyed. Why? Because that's what Christ did. When you live like Christ, and when you serve like Christ, when you empty yourself like Christ, Christ delights in you. You want to know how to respect and obey and joyfully work for a tyrant boss? You remember that Jesus washed Judas's feet and then he washed you clean of your sins. Say, I want to be like my Savior who became the servant of all. And you remember that your service is received and enjoyed by Christ. It's not in vain. It doesn't go unnoticed. I know it feels that way sometimes. My work here is going unnoticed. My joyful service is going unnoticed. Who's going to speak up for me? Who's going to speak on my behalf? Christ will. Christ sees. Christ knows. And Christ rewards and returns that with grace and love and strength and comfort to get through it and to move on and to press on. And who knows, in your service, in your humble submission, in your obedience, in your joy, who knows whether or not God will save your boss and your coworkers through your witness to the transforming power of Jesus Christ. That's the goal. To please Christ, to obey Christ, and to help others see Christ and know Christ. That's what we're after. So let's work like it.
Thanks for listening to this sermon from Christchurch. To hear more, subscribe to our podcast in iTunes or visit our website at wearechristchurch.com.